And good evening and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 34. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, and we are enjoying really, really pleasant weather here at the moment. Ever since I came back from vacation, actually. A little warmer today, but it's been nice and cool, and it's just been perfect walking weather, and I have been taking advantage of that. And maybe it's the whole thing about a body in motion wanting to stay in motion, because ever since I came back from my trip, I've wanted to walk more, and I have actually been walking home from work most days this week. I wasn't able to every day because of other things that I had going on. And this was a beautiful weekend. We had a long Labor Day weekend the last few days. And Pete and I went up to Wisconsin. I'm not going to talk about that this time. I am going to talk about that next time because there's a lot to talk about that we did this weekend. But this is actually going to be part three of my little travelogue slash talking about my recent vacation. Now, episode number 32, I talked a bit about London and the things we did there. And last time, in episode 33, I talked a little bit about the various aspects of being in the UK that I liked or different, etc. And I really, really like the UK, and I miss the UK when I'm not there. And it's one of those places I would really, really like, at some point in my life, to go and live there for a time. I don't know about forever, but at least, you know, for a few years. Go over there and live over there. And I probably talked about that a little bit last time when I was wishing I had Hadrian's Wall in my backyard. But it is a place that I have a great affinity for and a great fondness for. So, kind of a little bit of background on why we wanted to go to Hadrian's Wall to begin with. Well, as I was saying in episode 32, I was talking a bit about my best friend Paul. And Paul and I have been best friends for over 30 years. We met back when we were in high school. And we've maintained this friendship for this entire time. There's never been a time when we've really been out of touch with each other. And one of the ideas that we came up with, and this was way, way back when we were teenagers still, we came up with this idea that we were going to walk Hadrian's Wall in kilts. Pipe dream, completely unrealistic at the time. And this year, last year probably, when I was kind of thinking about, okay, well, what should I do for vacation next year, etc., that came to mind. And it's like, well, you know, we both want to go on a trip, and we both have kilts, so why don't we do Hadrian's Wall? It's something we've always talked about, and it's something that we'd both like to do. Now, interestingly enough, back then, back in, you know, 1980, when we first started talking about doing this trip, we wouldn't have been able to. And the reason why is because the Hadrian's Wall Path didn't exist back then. The Hadrian's Wall Path is one of the newer long-distance trails in Britain. It only opened in 2003. And actually, the route is still even being tweaked, even as we speak. There are still parts of the trail that are under construction. They probably have all sorts of legal issues as far as right-of-ways and so forth. And as we'll hear a little bit later, the people who maintain the trails don't always do a terrific job, and I think that probably goes into the equation as well. So a little bit about Hadrian's Wall in general. Hadrian's Wall was built at the initiative of the Emperor Hadrian. Now, Hadrian wasn't the first emperor to come up with an idea of building a wall across the north of England. Now, the first time that was probably mentioned was during the reign of the Emperor Claudius, which was a long time before Hadrian. But there were other emperors, and the emperors Domitian was the one who probably got the ball rolling. And Trajan, who was Hadrian's predecessor, started to set these plans in motion. Now, when Hadrian became emperor, he really set this project in motion. And there were already some earthwork-type walls in the northern part of England at that time. And what Hadrian did was he actually embarked on a full-scale construction operation. This would have been about the year 122, somewhere in that area. At that point, it was a turf wall and wood. Hadrian had the wall built in stone. The wall runs about 85 miles, from what is now Newcastle upon Tyne to a little town called Bowness upon Solway on the west coast. It runs coast to coast of Britain. Now, one of Hadrian's successors, Antoninus Pius, built a wall further north, which is called the Antonine Wall, but that was a turf wall. It was never much of a fortification, and in fact, it wasn't a very effective fortification, but it was quite a bit further north. So the reason why they built the wall was because the Romans were able to conquer the southern part of England without too much trouble. And they reached a certain point, and it got to the point where the tribes in that area, the Scots, the Brigantes, and others, they were just too tough for them up there. So they kind of, okay, this is where we're going to hold the line. This is where the border is going to be. And Hadrian was really kind of the first emperor to say, okay, this is where the border should be. So they built this long wall. And the way they did it was they had a Roman road, which was called the military road. And they built a wall right along this military road. And the Romans had this thing for building very straight lines and kind of ignoring the contours of the land and so forth. And they built a road, which involved raising up the road a little bit. And they put a fortification in front of it. And the fortification was a 20-foot-deep ditch. And this ditch runs the entire length of Hadrian's Wall. There are some places where the ditch doesn't exist because there are cliffs or other natural defenses that would make the ditch unnecessary. Now, the ditch was actually kind of a formidable thing, even by itself, that was quite an achievement. And the ditch would have had a false bottom, and they would have put spikes or sharp rocks or whatever down there to kind of make it more difficult for people to cross over. Now, on the other side of the road, they put a series of fortifications where it consists of two ridges with a ditch between. And this is what is now known as the Vallum. Now, that's probably not the name that the Romans called it. And nobody is really quite sure what purpose the Vallum served. Now, there's a lot of speculation that it separated the military zone from the civilian zone, that it was a barrier to keep the Roman conscripts from running away and so forth. But nobody really, really knows that for sure. So the wall was built with a castle which held about 30 soldiers every mile, every Roman mile, and Roman miles aren't quite the same as English miles. And then spaced evenly between each mile castle, there were two turrets, and the turrets would have held just a handful of soldiers. And presumably they would have marched back and forth between them and, been able to keep track of the, comings and goings and, were able to stop people from the wall. Now, even though it was regular Roman legionaries from Italy that built the wall, these legionaries didn't actually guard the wall. They left that task to conscripts from other places. This had been places like Africa, Egypt, Syria, all of the former Yugoslavia. So they weren't the regular Roman troops that actually built the wall, that actually guarded it. Now, there, along the wall, of course, there were settlements. And every so often you would have a large fort, a large garrison, and I believe there were 16 of these forts along the 85-mile length of the wall. And, of course, many villages. Now, a lot of these little villages are still there. They have names like Walton, Headed on the Wall, Wall's End. If you get the drift, the term wall comes up quite a lot in the names of the towns that are along the way. So anyway, what happened? Well, after the wall was built, it was breached in the second century, later in the second century, and the Emperor Septimius Severus came in, and he had the wall fortified and rebuilt and repaired. And then after that, The wall was more or less forgotten. The wall was still the frontier of the empire for a while. Eventually, Roman power waned, and the wall was abandoned. And what happened over the centuries was that the local people used the wall as a source for ready-made stones. So as a result of that, there isn't a lot of the wall left. And the only reason why the wall exists at all today is by the efforts of various people who were able to conserve the wall. They would rebuild the wall. And this happened, you know, in the 18th and 19th centuries, a lot of this. And the reason why we have as much of the wall as we have is because it was covered over by turf and sod, and it was not accessible. So a lot of that would have been underground. And the bits that are above ground would have actually been pillaged for use in other buildings. And indeed, you can see in a lot of the churches and a lot of the castles and a lot of the houses even, from the medieval period, you see walls, stones from Hadrian's Wall incorporated into the construction. So it was very common to see all along the path, you see Roman stones being used for paving, being used in buildings. There's Thirlwall Castle, which I'll talk about in a bit, which is built almost entirely of stones from the wall. So as a result of that, the wall doesn't run the entire length anymore. In fact, there's about 8 miles of wall, where 85 miles of wall was before, and all the rest of it is gone. Not too surprising, because it's 2,000 years later. So anyway, so the wall starts or ends, as you prefer. Now, most people walk the wall from east to west, and that's what we did. Then you can walk it the other way as well. And the wall starts up in Newcastle. Now, Newcastle is a kind of an ugly little town. Not a lot up there. It's kind of a rust belt type town. They used to have shipyards there. They used to have some industry there. It doesn't really exist anymore. So as a result of that, it's kind of a city in decline. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, in that you have a city that has actually lost a lot of population since its heyday. And this evidence of this is everywhere. And anyone going to Newcastle upon now, you really can't miss it. There are numerous empty stores, shut down pubs, and even out in the neighborhoods, many, many, many empty houses. And it's just kind of a dismal place. So I'm not going to really talk about Newcastle very much. Now, we went up to Newcastle on the train, and found a B&B. Now, our B&B was kind of inconveniently located, kind of out in one of the bad neighborhoods. And I say it's a kind of a dodgy area of Newcastle. Now, I've been talking a little bit about the places I'm staying, but I'm not going to even mention this one, really. The B&B, it was okay. It was not in a neighborhood that was convenient to town, so I would not recommend it to anybody. And it was not in a very good neighborhood. Our first day in Newcastle, we kind of looked around downtown Newcastle. We saw what there is of the fort. Now, there really isn't much of the fort there. Now, the fort was called Segedunum. I'm not quite sure how you pronounce that, but it is the official beginning of the trail. And this was actually a fort that was reinforced by Septimius Severus, and was one of the main forts along the trail, one of the main garrisons. Now, there isn't much left of it today. You'll see this, the kind of just the foundations. And really, of the forts and of the mile castles and the turrets, you really don't see much more than that. In fact, I think about the highest part of the wall we saw was about 12 feet high. And that was on a cliffside coming down, and the wall would have necessarily have had to have been a little bit higher. Most of the time, the wall was about 5 feet high, maybe a little bit more than that. So the first day's hike was you come out of Newcastle, and you follow the Tyne River. And there's some nice scenery there, but most of that first day is a walk along the Tyne River through Newcastle. Which is to say, it's kind of boring, and you're walking through, you know, abandoned factories and old steelworks and shipyards and things like that. There's really not a lot there anymore. And more's the pity, but the trail kind of winds up along the river, and you get a few good, you know, views up of the river. And of course, you get some nice views of the bridges, because Newcastle has a lot of bridges over the Tyne. The first day's hike was 15 miles. Now, most of the days that we walked were 15-mile days. And the first day's walk ends in Heddon-on-the-Wall, tiny, tiny little town just outside of Newcastle. And also in Heddon is where you really encounter your first little piece of Hadrian's Wall. And that I have a photo of that little piece of wall up on my Facebook page. And that's sort of your first glimpse of what the wall looks like. It's not a very impressive piece, especially when you get later into the hike. But Heddon on the Wall, it's a charming, charming little town. Now, there are two pubs there. One is, I believe it's called the Three Tuns. And that's T-U-N, not three tons like in 2,000 pounds being a ton. And another one called the Swan. Now, the Swan is actually a kind of a restaurant pub, kind of fancy. I wouldn't say ritzy, but it was definitely a place where if you go in jeans and a T-shirt, you're going to feel underdressed. And we went there for dinner the first night that we were in Heddon. Now, we didn't stay in Heddon. And the reason why is because there wasn't any space available there. We actually went to a place called Iron Gate Farm. And that is about 2 miles outside of Heddon. And it's right on the wall, and therefore right along the trail. So it was a very convenient place to stay. Now, it was a bed and breakfast, and it's a working farm. Guy, single man, probably about mid-50s, owns this place. And kind of fancy, you know, kind of a good place to stay. I'm telling you about this place, and I really couldn't tell you how much it cost to stay there because I wasn't keeping track. It was Paul that was keeping track of all that. But anyway, we went in there and spent some time just kind of getting acclimated there and went back into town by taxi because we had to kind of go back into Heddon. There really isn't anything out by Iron Gate Farm. So Iron Gate Farm, yeah, I do recommend it. It's a pretty nice little B&B. He has his own sheep out there. Not a very big plot of land. The most irritating part about it is that he, for some reason, he didn't allow the path to go through his farm. You have to go around. It's really, really irritating. So day two of the trail is another 15-mile day, roughly. And you start out in Heddon. Or we started out in Heddon, and we went as far as Chollerford. Actually, we went just a little bit further than Chollerford, a little place called Humshaw. And the reason for that is because that it didn't seem as though there was going to be any accommodation in Chollerford. Now, we were very surprised to find out that we probably didn't need to go as much trouble as we did to make all our plans in advance. Really, what we found in reality is that there were always places along the way where we could have stayed. So that's just some advice for anybody who happens to be doing the trail. Yes, you can go and kind of wing it, and it might make your trip more enjoyable if you have a more flexible schedule than we did. Now, I'm not just saying that we had a bad time, because far from it. It was actually a very nice hike. But when you're hiking a 15-mile day, sometimes maybe you want to take a day off, or if you get a blister and you want to take some time off, you know. So we didn't need to plan it as tightly as we did, and that's kind of my point. Anyway, the second day is kind of more interesting. Now you see more of the wall along the way. You start seeing some real evidences of the wall, and even though you're walking along a freeway for most of the way. Now, this freeway was built on top of the Roman wall. So you don't see much of the wall. You see a lot of the fortifications and the ditch and so forth, and you kind of know what side of the wall you're on based on this the earthworks and so forth. You have the vallum on one side of the road, and you have the ditch on the other side of the road. It's the B6318 running right on top of where the wall was along the old Roman military road. The British like to recycle their roads because the Romans built a very nice roadbed for them. And there really isn't a lot along the stretch of trail of interest. Now, you do have one of the main forts, but it's called Redchester Fort. But there really isn't much of really above the ground. It's mostly underground, and you kind of see lumps and bumps. There really hasn't been a lot of excavation done there. So a lot of the time you're walking along the freeway, and you have the ditch on one side and the vallum on the other side. We did stop at a very nice little pub for lunch, and I want to say it's called the Matfin High House, I think it was called. And there was this kind of a little lunch place that we stopped along the way. Ended up in Humsaw. And in Humsaw, which is about a mile north of Chollerford, and it's kind of off the trail, we stayed at this place called the Crown Inn. The Crown Inn is a pub accommodation. Now, when I say pub accommodation, a lot of people kind of think, ooh, you're staying above a bar, it's noisy, and so forth. Far from it. We found, on this trip certainly, that the pub accommodation was just as good, if not better, in some cases, than the B&Bs that we stayed in. So I definitely wouldn't shy away from playing at a place like the Crown Inn. The Crown Inn was quite acceptable. They had a great pub. They served food there. And it was a very nice finish to day two. Now, at Chollerford, there's actually a second alternate route that you can take. Now, we didn't do this alternate route. It goes through Corbridge. And I've heard it's a very nice walk. We chose not to do it, mostly for reasons of time, because we could have added another, you know, half day or day onto our trip had we decided to do that. We chose not to do it. I've heard it's nice, though. And in Corbridge, they actually have Roman remains, because Corbridge was actually one of the big Roman settlements along the trail. Anyway, we chose not to do that. So anyway, onward to day three. Now, right at Chollerford, and before we continue on the trail, we decided to go visit the bridge embankment, which is where the Romans had actually built a bridge over the local river there. Now, the bridge doesn't exist anymore, but the foundations are still there. Now, the river has actually moved over time and is no longer next to this bridge embankment, but we went there because there are some Roman carvings in the wall, and the most notorious one, I guess you could say, is this large phallic symbol. Now, it didn't have a sexual connotation to the Romans who built it. It was a sign of prosperity, and there are actually several places along the wall where you find Roman inscriptions. They weren't graffiti, mind you. They were actually carved there on purpose when they built the wall and when they built the bridge and so forth. So that is something to watch out for, and I think it's well worth going to see. Right after Chollerford, there's one of the big forts called Chester's. We didn't bother stopping. There really isn't much remaining of it there. Now, that was a short day for us, day three. It's a 9-mile stretch. And it goes from Chollerford to a little town called Once Brood. There really isn't much of a town there. It's basically a pub by the freeway. It's a very interesting walk. And you notice at this point that the trail gets wilder, more up and down. It's hillier. And that is a foreboding of things to come, because the next day was very, very hilly indeed. The advantage, of course, to day three and also to day four is that you have lots and lots and lots of the wall. Lots of little bits of the wall everywhere, and including some fairly long, continuous stretches of the wall as it winds its way over the hills. Now, at this point, you don't have a ditch because the wall is built along the cliff tops. So there's constant up and down as you go over these rolling hills. And the hills get gradually steeper as you get towards Once Brood. It's just spectacular, spectacular scenery. And we stayed the night at the Twice Brood Inn, which is in Once Brood. And there, like I said, there really isn't much in Once Brood. There's a youth hostel, which we didn't stay in. And we stayed at the Twice Brood Inn, which again is pub accommodation. Quite acceptable. I think it was about 35 pounds a night, and they have a pretty good menu. A lot of these places have pretty good food, and especially when it's the only pub around for miles, a lot of the locals go there. And that's the sort of place that I really, really enjoyed hanging out when I was there. I really like the local pubs where the local people go, as opposed to the tourist pubs that you find, say, in London. So we had this really spectacular weather on day three, and this was the first day that we wore our kilts. And it had gotten cooler. Now, the first day of the trail, like our time in London, it was just hot. Hot and sticky and miserable. But at this point, it had cooled down quite a bit, and we felt it was cool enough to actually wear the kilts. It was very, very comfortable. And I have to say, I love kilts for hiking. I've said this before, I'll say it again. If the weather isn't too hot, it is the most comfortable garment ever for hiking. The next day is actually the most spectacular part of the trail. Day four. You're going up and down the hills between Onsprood and Walton. And this is really a continuation of the previous days up and down. And you have very steep hills, a lot of climbing, a lot of, you know, going down into the valleys and up again. And it was the most physically demanding part of the trail. However, it was definitely worth it. And we had spectacular weather. It was a little bit even cooler than the previous day. And that actually kind of forced me to wear my trues, as it were. Incidentally, day four was where we really, really got sick of hearing people who we passed saying, "Hey, you're on the wrong side of the wall." And that being, of course, because Paul and I were both wearing kilts, and we were on the south side of the wall as opposed to the north side of the wall. You know, it's really, really funny the first two or three times you hear the joke. By about the 50th time you've heard the joke, it really, really gets old. But the wall there is very, not continuous, but there's a lot of large and long chunks of wall. And you kind of, it gets to a point where you actually kind of get tired of the wall. And you come across yet another turret and another mile castle, and you kind of say, "Oh yeah, well there's the mile castle." Yep. It's hard to imagine being jaded by the Roman ruins, but it does happen. And of course the most famous part of the wall is right near here. It's a place called Housesteads. There's actually quite a significant and well-preserved chunks of wall there. This was a long day for us. This was actually an 18-mile day. Very, very hard on the feet. And that's a very long way. And when you're going up and down hills the way we were, it is extremely, extremely hard on your feet. And this was actually where I got a blister. And I would have loved to have taken a day off after that. But, you know, as difficult as that day was, and as tired as I was by the end of it, it was definitely worth it. And we, you know, took more rests and so forth. Now, a lot of this day you're walking up and down hills, but as it goes, you stop kind of following the road and the cliff tops, and you end up in more rural country. Now, along this path is this little town, and I think it's called Banks. Not exactly sure. In this little town is Thirlwall Castle. Now, Thirlwall Castle is what I was talking about. It's a 14th century castle. The name Thirlwall means gap in the wall. So, obviously, you have this wall connection there. And this castle was built almost entirely out of Roman stones. So there's actually kind of a lack of Roman ruins in that period, because it was kind of used to build the castle. The castle's a ruin now, and it's not surprising, as a lot of these castles are. But again, it's very spectacular country, and you pass through a lot of these little towns. And as you get up into the higher country after that, you end up in a little town called Walton. And this little town of Walton is where I will end for now, because I'm running out of time. So I will continue this next time, and we'll talk about Walton a little bit, and we'll talk about the last couple of days of the hike. I didn't count on this running this long, but hey, you know, it does happen. And the next time we'll get to hear the end of the trip and also a little bit about what Pete and I did this past weekend. As always, I love your feedback. Please feel free to write to the show. The email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off for now. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.